You're listening to the Games Galore Podcast with your host, Brian Edwards.
And welcome in, Games Galore Podcast 14. I'm your host, Brian Edwards. Harbo is my producer. Harbo, victorious. Hail to the victors.
Yes, sir.
Didn't we have some sort of bet? Don't I owe you something?
At least $100, I think, is what it was.
No. Well, didn't we bet like a dinner? What did we bet?
Maybe drinks or something. I can't remember.
A couple rounds or something.
I'll have to go back and listen.
Yeah, that was the most misleading final of week one, and we'll do a little week one win sprint here, but we'll stick with the Florida-Michigan game. So how are you feeling about those pick sixes?
Feeling pretty good.
You know, because you want to know what I was feeling. I was feeling when they intercepted him, you better get in the mo. Effing end zone, because if you don't, this is just going to be a field goal. And when we got in the end zone, I was like, yes, okay,
here we go.
Maybe we're in business here. But as usual, Florida's offense, the ineptitude is mind-boggling. We're going on, it's 8 years now. And to say, for someone who grew up on and those Charlie Pell, Galen Hall teams with Wayne Pease and Kerwin Bell, those were, you know, we had some offenses. And then the Spurrier era, the most dynamic offense in the SEC had ever seen. And now this just pedestrian dog shit offense that I deal with week in and week out for 8 years. To say I'm fatigued is the understatement of the decade. And I tell you what, man, Sumlin's on a boiling hot seat. And I mean, you know, I went out to have some cocktails, and I went 5-1 early in the week, and I gave away all my picks, so all you loyal listeners know. Got fortunate with South Alabama, backdoor cover. Lost App State, but I took them at halftime and got a generous cover on the halftime. I won some coin. I had a nice week, Harbo. And I forget when we were doing the show Wednesday. I think if I remember right, I was saying Vandy's 3.5. If it gets to 3, I like Vandy, and I did hammer Vandy, but I did not get it in my pick pack, which really bothers me. And so I wake up Sunday, I'm 5-1, I'm 83%.
Feeling good.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. Like, I'm like, when you look on the right rail of the buy picks page on Vegas Insider, I'm in a tie for second for percentage, only because one guy is 100%. I don't know if he had, maybe he was 8-for-8, I don't know. But, yeah. Or maybe he was just 2-for-2, I'm not sure.
Right.
But then, you know, my name's all up there, and I'm like, well, man, I bet I'll sell tonight. It took me like an hour and a half to figure out if I was going to take A&M or West Virginia. I was like, I think these are going to be close games. I want to take one of these dogs, but I don't want to take two and then, like, you know, ruin that 83% clip.
Right.
So I took West Virginia, Heartbreak Hotel. I thought Greer played well. I thought the reason I played West Virginia is I thought they had the quarterback advantage. I'd never seen Josh Jackson, but the redshirt freshman. And speaking of just quarterbacks we haven't seen, and really my two biggest questions were Virginia Tech and Clemson, because I have not seen their quarterbacks play, but I think they have very solid teams, and we got our answers for those two teams. And now, and look, I thought FSU played really good defensively all night. That was a physical Alabama FSU game Saturday night. And, you know, obviously, unfortunately for the semis, and I do feel bad for the kid, and I really don't normally feel bad for any semis, but no, Francois is a good kid, tough as nails, and he had taken some violent hits the whole game, so for him to get hurt like that, just getting tracked down was odd. But he's out for the year, patella tendon, and now FSU. And now we have the answers at quarterback for Clemson. Kelly Bryant, he really looked good. And I'll pull up my week one rewind and get his stats here in a second. But, you know, FSU loses its quarterback. Clemson I know it was Kent State, and I know it was at home, and he's going to have two tough road starts later this month at Louisville and at Virginia Tech. But now, just all of a sudden, snap of the finger, you know, and that's how quickly things can change in football. You're one play away from an injury. You're one play away from a momentum shifting pick six delicious or what have you. And now you FSU, they only have four scholarship quarterbacks left on their roster. Two are true freshmen, and the other two are redshirt freshmen, and that's all they have. I mean, Fisher is stuck with freshmen, and I forget who must have transferred out last year, but look, when a redshirt freshman like Francois takes over, and you know he's the present and the future, and even if he goes pro, he's starting the next 2 years, you know, I get it if they had an upperclassman backup QB transfer. I get that. But, man, are they in trouble. I mean, look, they're still really good. I mean, you know, you take away their special teams blunders, and they're still right there in the game, but they were doing nothing offensively outside of that touchdown drive early. And that's what Alabama does to you. The SEC Championship game last year, we marched right down and score on them to go up 7-0. We get a three and out, and then their great punter, like, pins us pretty deep. And, you know, Appleby throws a pick. Our defense steps up and gets them three and out and make a field goal. It's 7-3. And I feel like we got a couple first downs. And then the next thing you know, pick six, and they're up 10-7. Then they go three and out on us. Blocked punt. Touchdown. 17-7. So, I mean, that's just what you expect with Alabama. You expect defensive touchdowns. You expect defensive plays to set them up with a short field, and you expect them to do great things on special teams, and that is just what they do. And you got to give credit to Saban. Sorry, as I'm adjusting my reading glasses and my headphones simultaneously, and taking a moment for a little drink here.
How long do you think Saban will be there for? Just until they quit paying him, I guess.
The sooner he fucking leaves, the fucking better is all I got to say on that one.
Yeah, I gotcha. I agree.
I mean, the sooner the better. I mean, come on, NFL. Come get him. The guy's got plenty of energy left.
I think maybe we talked about it last time, but I believe technically he's the highest paid public employee in the United States.
I doubt there's many NFL coaches that are paid more than he is. Belichick probably is, but what's he making now? Like $9 million a year?
Something like that, yeah.
I'm sure he gets a national title bonus, too, and all that kind of good stuff. Well, yeah, so FSU's defense played great, but, you know, you have a couple special teams blunders, and I'm sure FSU fans are going, oh, if we don't fumble that kickoff turn, if we don't get that. And credit to Saban, he plays his best players on special teams. I mean, Damian Harris led them in rushing last year, ran for over 1,000 yards, and they got him out there blocking punts. Oh, my God, I forgot. The Gators blocked a punt, too.
Yeah, I was...
Oh, but that didn't end up being... He blocked it, but it still ended up being like a 25, 30-yard punt.
Yeah, there were times I was nervous and confused during that game, I'll be honest with you. Like, I don't understand what that initial call was when they thought somebody was over the line of scrimmage, but clearly wasn't.
Oh, the 5-yard touchdown. Moving.
Yeah.
I'm not. I just didn't complain.
Yeah. Well, obviously, but
we're just gonna go with that call. Yep. Here we go.
Good here we job, go. Defense. Keep going.
But I thought our D played well. I mean, those two third and 13 runs, man. Ugh. When they just run a draw on third and 13 and you don't even have a man anywhere near him till he already gets a first down. That's not as frustrating as watching my offense go three and out, three and out, three and out, three and out, three and out. Whoo!
How'd you feel about your coach's post-game reactions?
Oh, well, man, I didn't want him in a good mood. He didn't need to be, like, leaning over, though, like that, all right. Debbie Downer. But, I mean, I don't want him in a happy mood.
Right, right.
I'd rather him just be, well, look, I compare everything to Spurrier, and I just want everything to always be like Spurrier. Spurrier just, have I ever told you about at Mississippi State in 2001 when we got like a sack and like two holding penalties, and basically it was like, well, I think it was like second and 40.
Okay.
And we got sacked to make it like third and 45 at like our own 3. And he just, punting team, even though it's third down.
Right.
So after the game, they asked Spurrier, so coach, what was the deal with punting on third down? He goes, oh, well, I looked down at the play sheet, and we didn't have any plays for third and 35, and we sure as hell didn't have any for third and 45, so nothing on the play sheet. We don't have that one, so punt it. Just punt it. Yeah. Yeah, I'd do it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Next question. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's a wise move.
Damn right. Oh, that wasn't the only time he punted. He punted on third. He did whatever the hell he wanted, whenever the hell he wanted, because he was that badass.
Right.
You know, I've always said, look, look, Gator Nation's overreacting a tad here. I mean, we did have 10 players suspended. But, I mean, when you're 8 years without an offense, we don't want to hear any more damn excuses, okay? It was great. Thomas Goldkamp is a UF beat writer. Okay, right when McElwain got the job, I don't know if this was in his introductory press conference or just within a month of getting the job. They were asking him about his quarterbacks and who was on the roster, and he's like, well, we'll coach him. He goes, I mean, I'm confident I can coach my little dog at home, Clarabelle. I think I could coach her up to throw some first downs or whatever. And like in the middle of the game the other day, Goldkamp tweets, Clarabelle make the trip. that made me laugh in the midst of my
rage.
Outrage, anger, frustration. Is lividness a word? I was livid.
Yeah, livid for sure.
All right, let's get past that.
Yeah, yeah, let's move on.
All right, so, God, if you're A&M and Kevin Sumlin, you got to be sick to your stomach. So, yeah, I played West Virginia, so I was more watching that, and the A&M game was misleading. So I didn't really start paying attention to A&M, UCLA until it was 44 to, let's see, they got 45, so 38, 31. Yeah, it was 44-24, and UCLA was driving. And when they score right then to make it 44-31, then I started paying attention. Now, before that, by what I read on Twitter, and I have not gone back and watched the game, but I mean, this is just Joe Blows. They could have been exaggerating. But they were saying that, you know, they were snapping it with 12, 15 seconds left on the game clock, even when they were up, you know, 44-10 late third. Okay, and I mean, if that was going on, that's unacceptable. You know, I mean, he's done. He's done. I mean, he was going to be done regardless. Now, and I said this, oh, and by the way, who was talking about that team in Columbia, South Carolina all summer?
That'd be you.
Okay. Okay. That was me, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
I had them number 25 in the country in my post-spring top 25. Got a couple of emails on that one. Got a couple of tweets on that one. Bunch of people thought I was a dumbass. Okay. Now what? Oh, did South Carolina make the AP top 25? Let me look. Because I'm not... The AP top 25 has absolutely no relevance on this planet anymore since we have a selection committee, but I am just quite a tad curious, so I will look. And if they didn't make it, that's ridiculous. I've got them up. I think I got them 20. South Carolina did not make it? Are you shitting me?
No. Nope.
How, all right, surely they're leading the others receiving votes. No. So we got Utah 26, UCLA 27, West Virginia 28, Colorado 29. So they're 32nd? You bunch of dumbasses with AP votes. Are you kidding me? You've got Tennessee ahead of them? What a joke. You got the Gators ahead of them? The Gators fell out of my rankings. USF fell out of my... Man, they were a 17 all game with Stony Brook in the fourth quarter. Let me see who Stony Brook played the week before that. Oh, it doesn't link to a Stony Brook schedule. Okay. Okay. We'll go over my top 25 here in a few. We've got Christopher Smith on Twitter. I've always called him Chris when we did phone interviews. He's going to join us in a bit. He works for SEC Country. He's one of the head honchos over there these days. And we'll talk SEC with him. That's going to be in about 20 or 30. But let's go down and let's just go down the scoreboard and hit on a few things that I wanted to talk about. Oh, Oklahoma State. I said all summer, look for a lot of overs. They're not very salty on D. Their offense, one of the best in America. And I had the over in that game with Tulsa, easy winner. Mason Rudolph, 20 of 24, 303 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions. He also had a rushing touchdown. James Washington, All-American candidate, receiver, 6 catches, 145 yards, 2 touchdowns. But yeah, they gave up 432 yards. They are in Mobile, Alabama on Friday. Now, I tell you, if the storm, now here we are late Wednesday afternoon, and we've got Hurricane Irma that here we're in Blue Mountain Beach, Florida, which is on the panhandle, about 140 miles west of Tallahassee, an hour east of Pensacola. So we're in that part of Florida, the upper northwest, which from the latest projections, we might miss it or only get the very remnants. But I mean, if the eye remains a 5 cat, I mean, we're basically going to be getting 3 cat.
We'll get at least rained right? out for a little while, I think.
Yeah, so, but I was thinking, and I was like, you know, Oklahoma State plays at South Alabama Friday, and if it was going to come right at us, I was thinking I'd go to New Orleans, and I could go to the Oklahoma State South Alabama game Friday night, then go to the Beau Rivage and Biloxi and gamble that night, and then go to New Orleans the next day. I don't want to do any of that.
No.
I want to stay right here.
Batting down the hatches.
But that that could be a possibility. Oak State's 28, total 66.5. I've already got a play up on check out BrianEmmerSports.com or Vegas Insider, preferably BrianEmmerSports.com, because I get 100% of the sales there. And my clients last week, very happy.
Coming back for more.
Gosh, yes. And I should have had Vandy in there too, damn it. So Colorado State scored a lot of points against Oregon State in week one against Colorado in Denver last week. Not so much. The Buffs win 17-3. And so much for the Buffs losing Jim Levitt. And I think they only brought, well, I got my Phil Steele mag right here. I think they only brought back 3 starters on defense, but that's a pretty good Colorado State offense. Nick Stevens is a pretty good quarterback. And Colorado, three starters back on defense. Yep.
There you go.
And they held them to 3 points. Ken Nui Matalolo and Navy ruined Lame Chafin's debut, 42-19 win. Washington was not that impressive, but when you go across the country to Piscataway, New Jersey, whatever, get out of there with a win, 30-14 W at Rutgers. Wisconsin fell behind 10-0 to Utah State. No problem. They scored 59 unanswered. They covered easily as a 27-point favorite. Josh Allen continues to be overrated. I don't care what the NFL scouts say. Let's see what his numbers were. 23 of 40, 174 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Okay? If I'm remembering correctly, he threw 5 interceptions against Nebraska last year. Can I go back and get a game-by-game log right here? Doesn't look like it. Okay, so I could go to College Football Stats and do it, but I'll do that on the break. But Iowa, a 24-3 winner. I was laying a short number to Iowa State, and I kind of lean Iowa there, but I haven't made a decision. Another game that I had in my contest, and I'm pretty sure I said it here on the show, I said North Carolina lost too much personnel, has no business, has zero business being a double-digit favorite, even if it is Cal, who has started the Justin Wilcox era and done so quite nicely. Now, remember, Dave Aranda left Wisconsin for LSU to become the defensive coordinator, and Justin Wilcox took over, and Wisconsin's defense was dynamite last year, even though they lost Jack Ceci for a while, and they I think T.J. Edwards missed a couple games last year, and now Wilcox goes out to Cal, where he had worked with Tedford before. And by the way, Jeff Tedford is with Fresno State, and they're a 44-point underdog at Alabama this week, and Alabama is an abysmal 3-13 against the spread in its last 16 as a favorite of 35 or more, so file that into your little tidbit, one of your stats of the week. So Youngstown State, they're now coached by the old Nebraska coach, old LSU AD. Why the hell am I forgetting his name? Gosh, he was such a source of contention amongst the Nebraska faithful. No, not Bill Callahan, not Barry Cotton, not Mike Riley. Bo Pelini, duh. He had Youngstown State poised to get an upset on the Pitt Panthers, but they did not. Pitt won 28-21 in overtime. I thought South Carolina NC State was a hell of a game. Bentley throws three touchdown passes. Debo Samuel, that sick one-handed grab, returned the opening kick for a touchdown. Hey, look, they didn't even get everybody. They didn't even get Hayden Hurst involved yet. Brian Edwards, baby, or his mama spelled his her baby's name wrong with a Y, but I told you he's a beast. He had a big game. Northwestern really struggled to get past Nevada. Non-cover. Now they go to Duke this week. And, Northwestern had a horrible injury as well. I don't think it became official until Sunday, but starting corner Keith Watkins, poor guy. He was having a pretty good career, but he season-ending injury last year, season-ending injury this year. So that sucks for the Wildcats and Pat Fitzgerald. And many have said, and I said it might be, I didn't commit to it, this could be one of his best teams, and I do think they're the biggest threat to Wisconsin in the Big Ten West. But Northwestern did not look good against Nevada. Now, is Bama the old quarterback, Bama's old quarterback, Cornwell, is he had to sit out for a transfer? Because it doesn't look like he got any snaps. And Blake Barnett didn't even start for Arizona State either. Well, Manny Wilkins is not bad ahead of him, but I saw Barnett just got some mop-up duty. Kentucky, first road favorite spot of Mark Stoops' tenure. An L against the spread, but they win 24-17. Hey, great week for the SEC, 12-2. A&M's heartbreaker, and Florida's just debacle. The only blemishes. And, hey, has Vanderbilt ever come out of week one looking as good as they did? Their first three drives, I mean, if they had a third down, it was third and short. I mean, they just marched down Middle Tennessee's face. And look here, everybody will say, oh, Middle Tennessee. Look, Middle Tennessee is an upper echelon Conference USA program. Brent Stockstill, he didn't look that good the other night. He's coming off an injury last year. But, I mean, Brent Stockstill, I don't know how tall he is. He didn't look very tall the other night. So maybe I shouldn't say he's an NFL prospect, but I will say this. All right, now, hold on. Cornwell, as I just opened it, Nevada's page inadvertently, Cornwell is eligible. He just didn't play. So know what Cornwell and Barnett left out? You guys can't even get a snap at Arizona State and Nevada. What are y'all bitching about not starting in Alabama for? Harbo, help me. What was I talking about before that? I was going to my mag to look for something. Darn it.
Somebody's name. I'm sure it'll come out.
What was I talking about? Vandy. But I don't know why I was going to. I don't need to look up Stockstill's height. I know he had a 31-7 TDINT ratio last year. And he got intercepted by Vandy early. Ralph Webb looked great. Three catches, 101 yards. He did get held to 49 yards on the ground. Kyle Shermer picked up right where he left off at the end of last year in November. Now, he didn't play that great in the bowl game. But if we go to the Ole Miss, and they beat Ole Miss down at home, they beat Tennessee down, double digitizations to close the regular season. And then if we avoid the NC State bowl game and talk about last week in Murfreesboro, he's basically played the best games of his career three in a row, or three of the last four if we include the bowl game, which we should. There's no reason we should skip over it. So Kyle Schirmer is playing some ball. I wish Kyle Schirmer was wearing orange and blue on Saturdays. I mean, he had 296 yards. I think it was 20 of 28, 296, three touchdowns, no picks. Vandy's good. I said everybody in the SEC East is going to be better. And I remember I tweeted late last year, it was still in the season, I said South Carolina is going to be a legit SEC East contender next year with Bentley. And, you know, they had all the young talent, Samuel coming back. And Samuel missed games last year, too. I mean, Muschamp year two, what he did at Florida in year two. If Matt Barkley doesn't get hurt, Notre Dame would have lost to USC. He got hurt in the UCLA game, his shoulder. They should have beat Notre Dame anyway. Florida would have been in the national title game, Muschamp's second year. So they beat NC State, and I know if you look at the box score, NC State out-yarded them and all this and all that. That doesn't matter. I mean, South Carolina scored a touchdown on the opening kick. Okay, well, that's 80 yards they would have had toward their offense, but they got it all in one play and then some. So, I don't know what we take out of I haven't even looked at this box score. What did Tanner Lee do for Nebraska? They only beat Ark State 43-36. Now they go on the road to Oregon that's hung 77 on Southern Utah and Willie Taggart's debut. Wow, Ark State out-yarded Nebraska 497-463.
I didn't realize Penn State blew
Akron
out. Yeah.
Cream cheese treatment.
Yeah.
Tanner Lee, nice day for the Cornhuskers, 19-32, 238 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. Okay, not bad. Nebraska, wow, they won the turnover battle 2-0. Well, they needed to. Hanson threw for 415 yards for the, you know, Arkansas State's mascot?
No.
You never need to, but now you'll know. The Red Wolves. I don't know any other. I don't know any other team called the Red Wolves.
Some Game of Thrones type stuff.
Yeah. Okay. As I just continue to scan the Week One scoreboard, so the biggest upset in point spread history ever, and you know it would go down at Sam Boyd Stadium, and Howard is a 45 point underdog beats UNLV 43-40. Cam Newton's younger brother, Kalen, leading the way. Wait, I think that Howard's mascot is the bison. I think. I could be completely wrong.
Makes sense.
I think it's the bison. Oh, there was only 15,667 at Sam Boyd. But Cam Newton's little brother, 21 carries, 190 yards, two touchdowns, also threw a touchdown pass for 100 and 140 yards passing. So that was a big upset, or the biggest. My boys from Washington State on their over, they went 31-0. Vatek, Josh Jackson looked good. Boy, Butch Jones, man, he is such a clown. He is such a clown, and I knew Georgia Tech had a chance because it was such a head coaching advantage. And, you know, do you go for two there? You know, I don't know. I know when you're on the road and you're an inferior team, I think you go for two. The game being in Atlanta, the way I look at it in that scenario, in other words, okay, like let's say you're Arkansas State at Nebraska, and they were down seven. Let's say they scored, and you go for two there, and you don't get it. That's the right strategy. You try to steal that one. You make it come down to one play. But Tennessee, Georgia Tech, I mean, I'm sure many people say Tennessee is you know, bigger and more athletic, but not by a ton. So the way I look at it in a game like that, Paul Johnson decides to go for two. They don't get it. I just say, okay, you know what? If you get it, it was a smart move. If you don't, it was a dumbass move. And so, whereas the Arkansas State move, if Blake Anderson did that, I would say it's a smart move regardless of the result. So I got to say it was a dumbass move by Paul Johnson. Let's go to Triple OT. Yellow Jackets get the cash, however, and I bet those that bet on Paul Johnson were A-OK with that. I bet they were just fine. South Carolina at Missouri this week. Auburn at Clemson. This South Carolina-Missouri game is going to be awesome. Other awesome games. Stanford at USC. Remember, Stanford had last week off. Now, they were probably jet lag coming back from Australia 2 weeks ago. But that's an interesting game.
What were they doing in Australia?
They played their opener against Rice in Australia the week before week one, August 26th.
Oh, okay.
Oh, wow. TCU's a 3.5-point favorite against Arkansas. I do have a lot of season-ending injuries to let you in on. And one for Arkansas is Ryan Pulley, their best cover corner, done for the year. Maryland also lost their quarterback. We didn't get to that one. Props to my boy DJ Durkin. 1-0 as the Gators interim coach. After Muschamp got pink slip, former DC for the Gators, coaching up the Terps. He's got he will have to lean now on a 4-star true freshman quarterback by the name of Kasim. I got it in my article. I want to say it's Kasim Williams. No, Kasim Hill, a 4-star recruit. Terrell Pigram, their Maryland's previous starting QB, who went down with a season-ending ACL tear. He had accounted for 3 touchdowns, 2 via the air, 1 via the ground, before getting injured. And that's just a terrible Tom Herman debut. And I don't know which is worse, Matt Rhule, 48-45 to Liberty, an FCS team. I mean, who's the goat of the week? Is it UNLV? Is it Baylor? Or is it Texas? Those are pretty goatish performance. Here's Kelly Bryant's stats. 236 passing yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions, 77 rushing yards, and 1 touchdown. And remember, Clemson's got one of the best defenses in America. Now, Southern Cal, whoa, hello. They were down big chunks of that game to Western Michigan, and Western Michigan for 3.5 quarters did not miss PJ Fleck whatsoever. That was a tie game with 7 and change left. And then USC poured it on. They win 49-31, but the Broncos do preserve the spread cover. Purdue nearly started the Jeff Brohm era in impressive fashion. There were 6 lead changes in that game. Louisville did not take the lead for good until about 8 or 9 minutes left. Lamar Jackson did have a good stat game, but they only win 35-28. Purdue easily covers the number there. I'm trying. There's another bad beat I wanted to talk about. Okay, so Jacob Eason is out. The 4-star true freshman Jake Fromm out of Houston County High School in Warner Robins, Georgia. If you're not familiar with Warner Robins, it is it's kind of like once you get north of Tifton, which all you people out in Vegas have no idea where Tifton, Georgia is, but when you live in Gainesville or the Tallahassee area and you make drives to Atlanta your whole life, you're very familiar with that dump. Tifton also is the home of ABAC. It's a college. It's an agricultural college, but BC All-Star Camp in the 80s was there. And so I was a camper, and the guys on that Clemson team that lost to Tate George at the buzzer in the Meadowlands, what was that, the 89 or 90 tournament? All those guys were our counselors and our referees, and Eldon Campbell and Dale Davis and Marion Cash from the Bronx were in Tifton, Georgia at ABAC Community College. And Eldon Campbell was the worst ref ever. He never ran. He never ran. He never stretched. He just walked. He's way back in the backcourt calling like a foul down in the paint or something. Anyhow, so why did I start talking about Tifton, Georgia? Oh, because Warner Robins, where Jake Fromm is from, and Jacob Eason, the Georgia quarterback, is out. We don't know how long. Kirby Smart. He's like Saban. He's like Belichick. He said he's week to week, but he will be back this season. So that that gives you a lot of wiggle room.
There you go.
That gives you a lot of wiggle room right there. So Bouchelle, Texas's quarterback, is a question mark. I thought I read a quote where he's going to play. They're 26th to San Jose State. I don't know, man. San Jose State looked pretty good against USF for three quarters. Texas should not be laying 26, an all-star team of our high schools combined, Harbo.
All-star.
All right, Northwestern has gone from 3 up to 3.5, 4. I think I made it 4. I'll have to look at my notebook. If Northwestern had not struggled last week, I would be on Northwestern there. But I love both coaches. I love Fitzgerald. I love Cutcliffe. And, God, if you want to eat some chalk this weekend, Michigan. But, man, Cincinnati sucks.
Yeah, I don't want to jinx it. I'm going to watch the game.
All right. I mean, Cincinnati beat Austin Peay 26-14. Austin Peay, the Governors. I think that's the only school with the mascot of the Governors as well. We got to talk to some Nebraska-Oregon. Oregon, a 14-point favorite. I wish I could watch that Nebraska game from last week. Oh, Memphis-UCF has been moved to Friday in Orlando. They're going to kick at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. I don't think it's going to be televised. And Florida and Florida State have moved their games up to noon Eastern on Saturday. And
I feel like a storm's going to kind of impact a lot of football, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's coming up on Saturday.
Well, the Canes, Miami was actually – and I bet they're pissed because they were playing at Arkansas State. You know what? That would have been a losable game. Arkansas State just lost by 7. Nebraska, they would have had them at home. Oh, God, what town is that? Jonesboro, Arkansas. I hope we never go to Jonesboro, Arkansas. I hope I never go there.
Did you have a bad experience there?
God, no. I just don't ever want to be there. I just don't. I can't. I mean, so anyway, Miami's game is. Oh, they've already moved. The Dolphins-Bucks game is canceled, too. I mean, that's for medical and you know, they need their cops and EMTs resources. They need it for other stuff. I get it. But Miami was playing at Arkansas State. And if I'm a Miami player, I want the hell out of South Florida. Yeah.
Send me to Arkansas.
On a plane.
Yeah.
Like, I damn sure don't want to be on the turnpike stuck in traffic heading north.
No, you don't want to be on a bus.
I mean, I'm pissed if I'm a Cane player. A, I don't get to play football. And B, I mean, if the only time in their life they'll ever want to be in Jonesboro, or Arkansas, ever, and they could have been there, and now they're not going. I don't get that. I don't understand
I don't know.
Well, I mean, I guess they're saying they're – I don't know what they're saying. I guess don't want to be off playing a game where they're worried about their families.
And, yeah, help evacuate or something.
A lot of Miami players obviously are from Miami. All right, we got a lot more college football to talk, and I can't believe TCU is up to 3.5. I'm probably going to be on the Austin Allens. Western Kentucky, that's a very low total with Lovie Smith's Illini, 53. Oh, man. Oh, that Navy line's going up already? I don't even know what Tulane did. All right, we're taking a break. Games go off 14. Chris Smith of SEC Country will be joining us in just a few. Don't go anywhere.
Let's make sure there's some Budweisers there.
Welcome back to Games Galore Podcast number 14. I'm your host, Brian Edwards, in Blue Mountain Beach, Florida, with my producer, Harbo. We're going to get out to our featured guest of the day, Christopher Smith, the Director of Digital Strategy with seccountry.com. You can follow him on Twitter at csmith, S-E-C, Twitter handle at csmith, S-E-C. And on Thursday nights on SEC Country's Facebook page, you can listen to his gambling show, Wizard of Odds, about all things ATS-wise going on in the SEC. What's going on, Christopher?
How's it going, Brian? Glad to be on the Games Galore podcast. I've been listening to you guys doing some good stuff. Unfortunately, it sounds like your producer got the better of you this last week in the Michigan-Florida game. But other than that, it's been pretty fun listening to you guys.
Oh, I appreciate it. And He definitely has been listening with to throw in that nugget, Harbo. He has been listening, and yes. So, Christopher, I thought that was the most misleading final of week one because that wasn't anything but an ass beating by the team wearing those yellow mustard uniforms.
Maze. Oh, yeah. I mean, you look at the two pick sixes, if you take those away, and you get just a decent performance out of the Michigan quarterback, you could very easily be looking at like a 47-3 or something like that in that case. But I think if you're a Florida fan, which I know you are, you know, I know McElwain came out with what they just whipped our butts physically, quote, after the game, which you can't feel good about if you're the strength coach there. But I actually think looking at the game, I think taking Franks out was a mistake. And I also think other than, you know, I think missing a lot of assignments may have been a bigger issue than just getting whipped in a lot of cases. So you could maybe spin that positively if you're a Florida fan and think, well, just put Franks in there and don't miss assignments and maybe it's not a disaster. But definitely not the way you want to open the season if you're in Gainesville.
Oh, yeah. Thoroughly out-coached, out-played, out-everything. And it just, you know, when you've been watching this for 8 years, you feel so bad for the defensive players because I thought, other than those two third and 13 where they ran the ball and easily got the first down, you know, other than that, I thought our defense acquitted itself pretty well. I mean, Michigan ended up getting a lot of yards, but I mean, at some point when your offense is going three and out every single time, you know, you're going to get fatigued, and we were already, you know, missing a little depth. Anyway, who impressed you the most last week? I mean, I got to go with South Carolina, but I thought, and I know it was a very under-the-radar game, I thought Kyle Shurmur picked up right where he left off in November. I mean, I don't know that we can have ever come out of week one thinking Vanderbilt looked so good. I mean, let's remember Brent Stockstill had a 31-7 TDINT ratio last year, and they basically held him to nothing. And I remember tweeting like six, seven months ago that South Carolina is a legit East contender this year. I got laughed at. I had them number 25 in the nation coming out of the spring. South Carolina looked very legit to me. Missouri's having problems defensively. Tackle any of that you want, and then you can lead it into what we got with South Carolina at Missouri. Although Missouri's defense is terrible, Drew Locke and Jamon Moore have really got it going. What do you say on any of those topics?
Yeah, I know you've been on the South Carolina over the 5.5 win total that came out in the summer for a while. They get number two this weekend. You're getting fairly close already to making good on that one. I think if you're an SEC fan and you want to do the whole conference pride, we're better than you guys ACC thing, you know, it's all about how you splice that argument, right? Just like with any sort of stats argument. And I think in 2017, if you're an SEC fan, your argument is which of our teams is bad? Yeah, you know, I think you have 3 to 4 legitimate top 25 teams. Alabama, Auburn, LSU, and maybe Georgia. And then you have a couple, like the middle ground, like the Florida, Arkansas, Tennessee, to me, is not very strong for like a tier two. And so a Big Ten, ACC maybe gets you there. But if you're an SEC fan, you're arguing like, look, if Ole Miss, Vanderbilt, and Missouri, and Mississippi State are the four worst teams in our conference, our 1-14 is really strong this year. And I think that's definitely the case. I would say South Carolina, Mississippi State and Vanderbilt may have impressed the most, and I have them ranked like 9, 11, and 13 in my power rankings. And I would say another team that really impressed me this weekend was Auburn. You know, we know the Florida suspensions. Auburn was out without starting running back Cameron Petway and a receiver Kyle Davis, who was also supposed to start. And they held one of the more impressive teams in the group of five in Georgia Southern to 78 yards of total offense. Yeah, I've been really shocked. I mean, your boy Will Muschamp obviously recruited well when he was there. But if Will Muschamp couldn't do it at Auburn under Gus Malzahn with that offense, I thought, well, there's no way. This is sort of mercenary that's gone from Clemson to LSU to Auburn and gotten run out of town a few times. There's no way he can do it. But their defense has been really, really good in the last 2 years, and that's kind of surprised me. But going into the South Carolina-Missouri game, I kind of do the same thing you do where you sort of write out what you think the line should be before it comes out. And I had South Carolina as a 3.5-point favorite and sort
Me
of
too.
When I made the line.
Me too.
And when it opened up in a couple of offshores, I saw it was actually Missouri was favored by 1.5. And now that's quickly flipped the other direction. So if you didn't get it, now it's gone. But I think South Carolina should be the favorite in this game.
Absolutely. I made it 3.5 as well. I agree on a lot of points you just made. And let's bring up Todd Grantham's name. And I don't care who Mississippi State was playing. They only gave up 2 first downs, and it was either 27 or 29 yards of total offense. So Todd Grantham, big ups to him. And you obviously alluded to Kevin Steele in a very accurate way. He's been run out of town a lot of places. I mean, Geno Smith in West Virginia hung 70 on him, and then Dabo Swinney made the best move of his career and went and got Brent Venables. And yet Steele has done an outstanding job with Auburn's defense, which has surprised me as well. I agree with everything you just said there. I like South Carolina this week, and that will be an excellent game. As for Auburn-Clemson, I think the odds makers are being pretty nice to Auburn. Although I agree, I mean, you know, you got a unique offense like Georgia Southern's, and their only touchdown was a scoop and score. Thank goodness, because I had Georgia Southern plus the points, and that one certainly could have gone either way. I also had a nice backdoor cover on South Alabama. Let's talk Georgia a little more. Jake Fromm, true freshman, Warner Robins, Georgia. One of my rules is you know, I don't ever play on a guy making his first career road start, and I usually play against a guy playing his first career road start, but I'm not laying more than a field goal with Notre Dame. And I don't know if you're as bullish on App State as I am, but App State's a very solid football team, and other than the first quarter, Georgia and the late part of the fourth quarter when it was over and didn't matter, I thought Georgia was very impressive.
Yeah, I don't know how nerdy some of your listeners are, but I'm pretty nerdy when it comes to trying to handicap stuff. And you look at, like, you know, fumble recovery rate and Pythagorean win expectation for last year and all that kind of stuff. And I thought, and you know, wins in close games. And I thought coming into this season, I thought Georgia was a team that a lot of people were overrating. You know, looking at their offensive line, I thought it was bad last year, and they lost 3 starters off of that team, off of that group. And I'm not sold on Jacob Eason. I know he's sort of a party goer, hangs out in Athens a lot. Didn't strike me as a guy in the offseason that's in his dorm room on Friday night at 8 p.m. going over formations or anything like that.
No way.
he seems like a guy that's kind of getting by on his talent. So, and entering the season, I thought, you know, the cornerbacks are a little bit of a question mark. Nick Chubb didn't look the same last year as he did the year before. So I didn't think they were going to be a bad team, but I thought, well, you know, Florida I kind of had picked over Georgia, and I thought, well, Tennessee and South Carolina could even, you know, get Georgia as well. But then you watch Georgia play App State, and I agree. I thought most of those questions they answered very well. Their offensive line played a pretty good game. Nick Chubb looked like the old Nick Chubb. And I also thought when Jacob Eason went down at quarterback, I know it's a very small sample size, but Jake Fromm could be better. And he certainly looked more accurate. I sort of like him as a person better just because he seems more kind of nerdy, more like about the team, not like the playboy kind
better
of personality.
Better leader.
Better leader. You know, maybe that's sort of just a narrative, but I don't know. I'm afraid to bet on this game because I kind of like Notre Dame at home in this game with the true freshman on the road, and also think maybe Georgia looked better against App State than they really are. But I also am a little bit afraid that this Jake Fromm guy is going to turn out to be somebody who ends up being better than Jacob Eason.
I mean, it won't surprise me, man. He looks like he's got great command of the huddle. Everything you just said, I've heard the same things about Eason's partying. He certainly is not in great shape. And look, I drink my Bud Heavies as well, and I'd probably be a little thinner if I drank a few less. But, I mean, I think Eason is Now look at this. The MGM has Notre Dame at 6.5. I see another book at 5, and I see another book at 4. This number's all over the place right now. Mississippi State La Tech. Last time they went there, Sly Crooms last year. Their best linebacker, whose name eludes me, I know he played for the Eagles for a while. Can't remember it. He got tore his ACL real early in the first quarter. And Derek Dooley and the Bulldogs of Ruston, Louisiana, won outright. I don't know if you've decided, if you've completed your handicapping yet. And the line has gone north of 7. La Tech won handily last week over, you know, Northwestern State. They're in state lesser than, but they didn't cover. They won 52-24. I think I'm going to stay as far away from this one. Any thoughts here? I love Nick Fitzgerald as a runner, but, man, his passing is still very inconsistent. But, like I said, I was impressed with Todd Grantham. I didn't think Mississippi State's defense was going to be all that this year. And look, they didn't really play anybody last week, but they'll definitely get a test. I mean, La Tech is a team that's always scoring points, whether they're playing Conference USA or whoever they're playing.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Todd Grantham earlier on this talk, and I think there's no like Nick Fitzgerald's going to have no problem scoring 4 or 5-plus touchdowns on this La Tech team, even though he may struggle against the Alabamas of the world and LSUs later on. And so to me, it comes down to the defensive side, and I kind of figured I think they're on their 4th defensive coordinator in 4 years, something like that. Peter Sermon may have been the worst defensive coordinator in major football last year.
They had Manny Diaz 1 year, and
I think they had Jeff Collins too before that.
Yes, it is 4 DCs in 4 years.
So I kind of thought going into this year, Grantham, he's not exactly like the Kevin Steele where it's like so many different formations, and it may be just too much for like a college kid. It's like a front 7 defensive player, maybe not the sharpest kid, but super athletic. Like, I just kind of figure Grantham's schemes may be a little much for these Mississippi State JUCO transfer guys that have had to deal with a bunch of different schemes and systems. But in the first game, it certainly looked great. I mean, Charleston Southern is an FCS playoff contender this year. And I actually went to Samford in Birmingham, and Samford hung, I think, more than 500 yards on Mississippi State last year. So I know they were just an FCS team in Charleston Southern last week, but compared to what they did last year against another FCS playoff team, you know, a huge difference there. So I think I saw this game open somewhere for Mississippi State -6, and I really liked it when it was under a touchdown. But more than a touchdown, I think I'm with you. I think I'm staying away for this one. I like it. Like, I kind of thought Mississippi State would be about a 10-point favorite in this game, and now that it's north of 7, I think I'm kind of staying away.
We're talking to Christopher Smith, the Director of Digital Strategy for SECCountry.com. You can follow Christopher on Twitter. His handle is at CSmithSEC. You can also listen to his radio show, podcast, whatever you want to call it, or they call it The Wizard of Odds. It's a gambling show about SEC football on Thursday nights on the SECCountry.com Facebook page. Go give it the like, thumbs up, dealio. All right, so Arkansas won a thriller in OT against TCU in Fort Worth last year. They lose their best cover corner in Ryan Pulley last week. TCU played a nobody and put it on them bad last week. TCU right now is favored by 3 and even 3.5 at some spots. And I have not bet Arkansas yet, but catching 3 or north of that, I heavily lean to the Hogs despite the absence of Pulley. And the Hogs have gotten a little extra rest as well because they played on Thursday. Just a little minor factoid as a little icing on the cake if you already like the Hogs. Christopher, your thoughts on the Horned Frogs venturing into the Ozarks?
Yeah, you know, I try to talk myself into Arkansas being the 4th best team in the SEC West before the season, and with A&M's loss, disastrous loss to UCLA, I think I kind of have to leave them there for now. But some of the things that I try to talk myself into them being better that I saw in their season opener, you know, their offensive line, you got a guy in Brett Bielema that came from Wisconsin who puts his offensive line on the cover of the media guide and then gets, you know, last year they had a 6'7" or whatever giant left tackle that's
Dan
gone.
Dan Skipper.
Dan Skipper, sort of known, you know, for bullying people up front. But you look at their team in the first game this season and last year, I know they ran for a lot of yards last week, but I think their offensive line has gotten bullied a lot more than it's been the bullier. You look at the Auburn game last year, it was a complete disaster. They ran for, what, like 400 yards or something on this Arkansas team. So I'm a little bit worried. I thought the line that I wrote down before the line came out, I had TCU -3.5. And so when it opened, you know, pretty far away from that, I was excited. And now it's kind of come in line with what I thought it should be. I'm worried that TCU's defensive front will be too much for that Arkansas offensive line. And I know Austin Allen is supposed to be one of the better quarterbacks in the SEC, and rightfully so with what he did last year. Outside of DeAndre Francois, maybe the toughest quarterback in the country in terms of just getting shellacked every week, shaking it off, going back to the huddle. But he didn't look comfortable to me in that opening game either. And I know they lost some really good weapons at receiver. Raleigh Williams was, I think he led the SEC in rushing last year, is now retired due to injury. I know they have a decent duo in the backfield. The defense to me is very vanilla and is just okay. And the fact that their offensive line can get pushed around by TCU kind of scares me away from this one.
Right. I hear that. But, you know, and this goes for TCU too. I mean, both teams scheme-wise could have been very vanilla, not wanting to put anything on film last week. I don't disagree with anything you said, especially the stuff about, I mean, Arkansas lost a heck of a group of wide receivers. I mean, when you talk about Drew Morgan, Keon Hatcher, even the tight end Sprinkle. I mean, I thought Dominique Reed, the JUCO transfer, was a pretty big disappointment last year. He made some pretty good plays late in the 15 campaign. But, yeah, I leaned to Arkansas there, and I think the O-line will play better. And I thought once the Raleigh Williams injury went down, I thought they caught a break getting David Williams, the grad transfer from South Carolina. I know he made a few plays last week. He'll end up being a contributor on this team, and I do agree with the assessment of Francois and Austin Allen. And, man, Francois was just taking a beating last week, and then then he goes – let's talk about FSU for a minute. I mean, going into the game against Alabama, let's talk about it from both sides, too, because Alabama offensively did not look all that great, but I think that's a really good FSU defense. And what a physical game that was, and both teams, you know, suffering some season enders. The ones for Alabama are ones they can certainly recover from. But, special teams coming through. I mean, whether if it's not special teams, it's defense that's giving them touchdowns or giving them a short field. And Alabama looked like the best team in America to me, especially the way Ohio State struggled in the first half against Indiana. Now they ended up pouring it on. But let's remember, Indiana's second-best receiver besides Cobb, Nick Westbrook, got hurt in the first half, early in the first half, towards ACL. I elevated, because my only question with Clemson, and I'll say this about Virginia Tech as well, was I just hadn't seen their quarterbacks play. Kelly Bryant looked good last week. Josh Jackson looked good last week. I elevated Clemson up to number two. I had them sixth in the preseason. So now I've got Bama 1, Clemson 2, Ohio State 3. Just any thoughts about Bama and FSU? Because, I mean, FSU, they're going with a true freshman quarterback. And their other backups are all freshmen as well.
Yeah, I think Alabama is definitely beatable, but I think you have to beat them in all three phases, like you mentioned. Like, it's everything has to come together. You can't give them anything. And I think Alabama fans are getting, you know, not quite to the level of you and the folks there in Gainesville with Florida. But I think Alabama fans are getting a little bit itchy and a little bit impatient on offense. You brought in a new OC from the New England Patriots and Brian Daboll, and you ran Lane Kiffin out of town finally, which to a lot of Tide fans at the end of last season was a good thing. And all the talk in the offseason was about, you know, Jalen Hurts improving as a downfield passer and how many weapons they had coming back on offense, the running backs, the receivers. And then in this game, it was basically like if you didn't get the ball to Calvin Ridley in the passing game a couple times downfield, it's like that was all they had. And I know Florida State is a really good defense. But Alabama's right side of their offensive line is not great. And I think the best thing about Jalen Hurts at this point is he hasn't made a lot of big mistakes. So I think if Alabama had turned the ball over, you know, once or twice early in that game, things could have gotten really scary for the Tide there. So I think that defense is going to be very tough to score on. But even so there, I mean, they lost Jonathan Allen, Reuben Foster, Tim Williams, Ryan Anderson. And then now you lose two more of your best pass rushers due to injury for the whole season on top of that. And then you have another linebacker who's out, and Sean Dion Helmsen, I think, with a groin injury on top of that. So I think Alabama is certainly deserving of that number one or number two spot right now, but they're certainly not beatable. And then the only problem with that is you look at their schedule the rest of the way, and LSU, if they can't just bully you at the line of scrimmage, you know, they're not going to beat you and outscore you with Danny Etling. So I think for Alabama's schedule, you know, I think it's very difficult for anybody to beat them until you get to maybe the Iron Bowl or even beyond that. So even though I think they're beatable, I don't know that there's a lot of spots in their schedule that I'm too worried about if I'm an Alabama fan right now.
Can't believe I hadn't mentioned LSU's defense. I mean, without Arden Key to not allow BYU to get past midfield, and Tanner Mangum is a big-time quarterback. And I know that BYU did not play very good the week before against Portland State either, but that's a big-time performance by LSU's defense. All right, I'm just going to just kind of flip around and ask you some quick-hit questions, and don't feel like you got to elaborate your answers a whole lot. All right, I'm going to go ahead and pencil Vandy in for 2-0, a win over Alabama A&M. Does Vandy beat Kansas State in Nashville?
I don't think so. I'm going to go no on that one. I think Vanderbilt's exciting this year, but if there's any team that's sort of that underrated, like it's almost like Kansas State is a better Vandy than Vandy is. And I think they're good enough, and they've got a little bit better quarterback than Vandy does, and I think they're going to win that game.
All right, and if you've got your Phil Steele magazine in front of you, flip to your South Carolina page, and I want to hear what you think the chances are of the Gamecocks going into Knoxville. I'm gonna get greedy and say with a 6-0 record. We can just say 5-1 if you want to. What are the chances South Carolina goes in with a 6-0 or a 5-1 record into Tennessee? Another game they can win. Then they would get their open date to 2 weeks to prepare for Vandy at home. Look, South Carolina could lose to Missouri this week, and we'll have to cool this Gamecock train down. But when you look, and I said this before the year, I said there's not one game on their schedule that isn't winnable. Just the rivalry factor, having Clemson at home, having Florida at home, I just wasn't thinking a whole lot of Tennessee and Georgia. I mean, look, if you had to pick South Carolina's record for the whole year right now, what would you do?
I see you. You're cashing that 5.5 already before they even get to Tennessee.
I just asked you like five different questions. Feel free to answer like two.
I think
of
you're
them.
Just giddy about the South Carolina start. I mean, I think Jake Ventley is probably my favorite quarterback to watch in the SEC right now, and maybe kind of from a passing and playmaking standpoint, he may be the best in the SEC. But I think the only question that I have about South Carolina, and I know Will Muschamp is a pretty good game planner. I know you're probably a fan of him to an extent, especially on the defensive side of the ball.
No doubt.
From his time there in Gainesville. And I think the only question that I have is they're not great at the line of scrimmage on either side of the ball. I mean, they're better than maybe I would have thought that they were when I watched the NC State game. But if you're not good or great on both sides of the ball at the line of scrimmage in the SEC, you know, starting 6-0 and having to beat, was it four SEC teams and one ACC team? I think that's a difficult task to pull off. But if you look at the schedule, they're going to be – I would favor them today at home against Kentucky if they get past Missouri, which I think they will. And then they're definitely going to beat Louisiana Tech at home. And then all you got left is at A&M and against Arkansas. And we saw how many points A&M gave up to UCLA. And I think Arkansas is not that great at the line of scrimmage either. So – I think South Carolina can win all six of these games, but I think 5-1 would probably be what I would pick going into that Tennessee game today. But I don't think there's any team on their schedule that you can say they're not going to win that game except for maybe the Clemson game at this point. I think they could legitimately beat everybody else on their schedule. Now, will they? I don't think they will, but I think 6 wins is definitely pretty safe at this point.
What week? But going into the year, I had Sumlin getting fired after losing to the Gators, just because that would be back-to-back L's with Bama in front of the Gator game, and then they've got 2 weeks for an interim coach to. When do you think Sumlin gets the axe?
Well, if the game against UCLA wasn't the first game of the season, and if Texas A&M didn't have a contract for Sumlin where they're required to pay him out every single dollar that they owe him for the rest of the way, then I wouldn't be surprised if he was already gone.
LAX, Lane Chafin not, style, Sunday night?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Regents are already coming out on Facebook, you know, opining that he should be gone. I think there was a Houston lawyer that came out with that on Facebook in the last couple of days. But I think, you know, they have two very, very winnable games coming up against Nichols and I think the Raging Cajuns of Louisiana Lafayette in the next 2 weeks. So they'll be 2-1 going into that Arkansas game. And to me, that's the big game. Yeah. I think, you know, they were favored, pretty handily.
Five or six in the games of the year, weren't they?
Yeah, something like six, something like that. Yeah. But I think if I were to make that line today, I think I would favor Arkansas in that game. And so I think if you lose that game, that's when you're in big trouble because you're 2-2, and then you got South Carolina, Bama, and Florida in your next three. And I think, like you've mentioned before, there's the Chip Kelly sweepstakes out there. I know that Texas A&M, I think, has the second or third largest endowment in the entire country. They have oil money. They're filthy rich. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them start throwing $6 or $7 million a year at some coach like Chip Kelly. So I think you've seen what Texas has been able to do with Tom Herman, even though they lost the first week, in terms of like just kind of hype and narrative and getting back on the map. And Texas A&M certainly saw that. I don't see them having a lot of patience. I mean, their AD came out on Feinbaum, for goodness sake, and said, look, if you didn't win this year, he's gone. So I think there's a very good chance that Kevin Sumlin is the first coach that's fired this year. It wouldn't surprise me at all. And I think depending on what happens in the Arkansas game, he'll either last longer in the year or less in the year. I think if he loses to Arkansas, I think he's going to go pretty fast.
Speaking of hot seat coaches, that September 16 showdown in the swamp between Butch and Mac is a very important one. And to the loser, it's going to be a lot of, as the guy Ron Zook used to say, a lot of noise in the system. Who do you think is on shakier footing right now, Butch or McElwain? I mean, it's got to be Butch, but look, if the Gator fan base does not see any life offensively sometime soon, and also, I don't know, what have you heard about Scarlett and Callaway? Do you think they're back by the Tennessee game?
You know, that's a great question. It sounds like it's like an NCAA issue, you know, and I think these things tend to linger much longer than they should. And you remember the stuff that happened at Georgia a couple of times with sort of them. I know it's a little bit different situation with, I think it's Todd Gurley signing autographs for some money, and was it AJ Green or somebody like that with the jersey. It seems like four games a lot of times is sort of the standard NCAA sort of punishment for things like that. So I don't know that for sure, but it wouldn't surprise me if they're still out, you know, week three or whatever it is. I thought he was a great coach at Colorado State, and obviously we know what he did at Alabama. I sort of expected that maybe recruiting would be the thing that he had to prove the most when he got to Florida. I'm not sold on Nussmeier, and I don't think a lot of Florida fans are sold on him. But like, aside from some of those little details, you know, McElwain, the jury's a little bit still out. Butch Jones, let's just face it, this guy's a clown. I mean, I hate to we have a writer at Tennessee, and Mike Griffith, who's very close to him, and I don't want to blow up our sources or anything like that. But you look at his coaching staff the last few years. I mean, their OC was a dude that was a Michigan administrative assistant that was retired. They just pulled out off the street and threw him in there. I don't think they've had a quarterback coach really in the last few years. And I know their DC rode the James Franklin train for a while and talks a big game, but I haven't seen much from them. just sort of very lucky to win this game against Georgia Tech. It kind of bought him a few weeks, but I think Bush will be his own worst enemy at some point. Florida has pretty much owned them at the line of scrimmage in most of the recent years, and even though what we saw against Michigan, I wouldn't be surprised if Florida sort of regrouped and laid it on Tennessee in week three, even if they have a bunch of players still suspended.
So Alabama, their last 16, when they're favored by 35 or more, they're an atrocious 3-13 against the spread. I don't think Tedford worked for Saban back in the day, but I know he's got a lot of respect for him. You know, you just go through a lot of these games against soft opponents the last few years, and for whatever reason, Alabama just doesn't cover, and they don't score many points. I mean, they beat Chattanooga 31-3. Let's see. They beat Middle Tennessee 37-10 2 years ago. They beat ULM 34-0. You know, they just don't cover in these games. They just rarely do. 48-14 over Western Carolina when they were laying 50. I think I'm going to play Fresno State. Not a lot. It's not going to be like my favorite play of the week, but Alabama just doesn't cover when they lay these big numbers. Any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I've actually played Fresno State as well. I think Alabama's 0-6 against the spread in the last in neutral site, the game following the big season-opening neutral site games in the Nick Saban tenure, and there was another one that was called due to weather in the last couple of years. But they've never beaten the spread in the game after the game under Nick Saban after the big season-opening neutral site thing. And I think part of it is Saban has this weird coaching respect ethos thing where he's like, I don't want to embarrass – some other dude that he respects, Jeff Tedford or whatever. But I think it's like another line that's spread out depending on what book you're looking at. It's somewhere around 44. So if Fresno gets two field goals or something like that, now you're talking about Alabama having to score more than seven touchdowns to break that number. That's a lot for this offense right now. And you look at a team that just lost four linebackers against Florida State. It's an emotional letdown spot, but it's also a spot where, as Saban's saying, we can't afford to have any other big names get hurt. And I think at some point they've got to get Tua Tagovailoa, or however you say his last name, the backup quarterback, sometime so that he's ready in case Jalen Hurts ever gets hurt. So I think Alabama could get out to a big lead in this game, but I see Saban pumping the brakes hard in the second half of this one. And if Fresno State can manage not to get shut out, I think they have a great chance to cover that big number.
Agree. We're agreeing way, way too much, Christopher. All right, so let me get you out of here on this one. Your thoughts on the NCAA boys, how bad they're going to drop the hammer on Ole Miss, and I guess a lot of it will depend on how badly they drop the hammer, but your thoughts on the candidates for their next coach and just in terms of, because of how bad the sanctions are, like, what coaches does that make, you know, completely out of play? Or, like, I think Neil Brown at Troy is a possibility. I have no idea if Brent Venables has been getting, like, offers for head coaching jobs at Power 5 schools through the years. I think he could be a good choice. But, first off, the way they wiggled out of pay and freeze – they've got plenty of money now, and you know an agent's not going to let a coach sign without it being like at least a 6-year contract to give some job security, because the recruiting sanctions are going to cripple them, and it's going to be a long rebuild. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a fan standpoint, it's disappointing just because we saw the trilogy in the last 3 years between Alabama and Ole Miss. I thought it was so good. I mean, there was very few teams, you know, you had the Kevin Sumlin, Johnny Manziel, a game or two. There are very few just, you know, run-of-the-mill SEC teams that have been able to really challenge Alabama. Those games are really fun to watch. And I think it's almost like macabre. It's almost gotten, like, too dark to even watch some of this soap opera stuff at Ole Miss, unless you're a Mississippi State fan and it's like your Super Bowl.
Sure.
But I don't know. I think – If Ross Bjork, the AD, survives this, I would be pretty surprised. So I think,
how is he not? His hot seat has to be so sizzling. And I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'll let you get back to where you were in just a second. But like the whole plan for them, their whole defense was just that Hugh is too good of a guy, too moral of a guy. This was a rogue assistant and a couple of just random boosters. I mean, that plan was just preposterous and destined to fail. It was insane, and everybody knew it. It's like, I mean, do you think they were waiting like for like the NCAA infractions meeting where they could fire him with cause? Where, I mean, obviously once the phone calls to escorts came out, then they had to fire. But I mean, what the hell were they thinking? It was just mind-boggling.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think there's a lot of what the hell were they thinking questions, including for Hugh Freeze. Why the hell did you call those numbers on a publicly issued phone as well? There's a lot of questions there. But I think, like, it's definitely a disaster. And I think Ole Miss is in a very weird position in that their best defense with the NCAA was, look, Hugh Freeze is a great guy. He didn't know all this was going on. And now they're going to have to stick with that story to some degree when they face the NCAA.
Good luck with that.
After already firing Hugh Freeze. Exactly. So I think Ross Bjork should almost just go dark, right? Like, he's got to be gone. So I think he should just stroll into the president's office tomorrow and say, I've got an idea for you. Why don't we hire Lane Kiffin here? I mean, like, there's no way they'd ever go for it with everything they have to do there and rebuild. But, I mean, you might as well, if you're going to go down with a ship, you might as well try some things and go down hard. They might as well just turn into, like, the Raiders and just kind of be the bad boy team and just say, look, like, we're gonna score 80 points a game. We're going to throw every play. We're going to recruit, like, all the, you know, JUCO guys with tons of baggage, and we're just going to embrace it. I mean, that to me, that's the only move you can make if you're Bjork. You're gone anyway. But you might as well try to sell the president on that.
Would you think Lane would even want that job? He didn't want Nick beating his ass for 5 years in a row.
I don't think anybody should want that job.
Right.
But
money
there's a lot
talks,
of things
though.
That I don't think Lane Kiffin should think, you know, that that he seems to do.
Yeah.
So he seems to have an ego where maybe like something like that, he would just maybe go for it for some reason. Money definitely talks as well. I think he's going to realize pretty fast after Wisconsin beats up on him this weekend, like, hey, maybe it's not going to be very easy to win games at FAU. I think the whole idea would never work because Ole Miss would never go for it. But if I'm trying to just find, like, and go rogue and just get a coach with a lot of baggage and just turn into the bad boy team, then maybe I go with something like that.
So no prediction from you. Who knows on this Ole Miss? I'm going to say Neil Brown of Troy, assuming, and I, you know, if you only lose by 11 at Boise on that long flight, that's not an indictment. I think Troy has a 9-10 win year. I think Neil Brown could be the man.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because if you're like a hot coordinator in FBS, I don't think the job, even then, like you at Ole Miss, you say, okay, we can't get a top-notch guy, so let's start looking at assistants that are up-and-coming. If you're an up-and-coming assistant right now in 2017, I don't think you can go to Ole Miss. So I almost think, like, and I don't think they can keep their interim coach either because everybody's so implicated in the NCAA stuff. And maybe you look at a coach like a Chris Hatcher going back to my alma mater at Samford. You know, that's a huge step up going from Samford to Ole Miss. But, you know, a guy who, you know, comes from a program that's like under the Baptist, you know, affiliation and kind of a clean cut image, like feel good, clean up the program kind of narrative. A guy who's made the playoffs at an FCS level that can recruit in the area. But I think, you know, I think your name, Neil Brown, would be great. But even for Neil Brown, I mean, you're a pretty hot name. Is Ole Miss really the right move? Is that really an attractive option for you? So I think Ole Miss is just going to have a really tough time even getting like the B and C players to come be their head coach.
Great stuff from Christopher Smith. Check all his stuff out at seccountry.com. He's the director of digital strategy. You can follow Christopher Smith on Twitter. His handle is @csmithsec, and you can watch his Wizard of Odds show about SEC gambling on Thursday nights on SEC Country's Facebook page. Christopher, we appreciate your time. Great convo. Enjoyed it. Let's do it again soon, and enjoy the games this weekend.
All right. Thank you, man. You too.
All right, buddy. Be good. Okay, we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll wrap things up. Games Galore 14. Don't go anywhere.
I just like to call it a bitch slap.
Welcome back. Games Galore 14. Wrapping up. Thought Christopher Smith did a hell of a job. SECCountry.com. We agreed way too often.
Yeah, there wasn't much debate.
Well, I didn't quite agree with him making TCU a 3.5-point favorite against Arkansas, but I agreed with most of the things he said. I don't know about that Sanford coach, but I don't know anything about that Sanford coach.
Well, he seems to know his stuff, man. He does talk about the numbers and the data.
He knows his stuff. Man, that guy, when I first got to know him, and actually we've never met face-to-face, but I was doing a weekly interview with him, and that was when he was with – was it Saturday down south? Yeah, in Orlando. Where was I going with this? But he just always knows. No, he knows. He knows this. Oh, I know what I was going to say. He cranked out like 20 bylines a day. I was like,
crunching his numbers.
What? 20 bylines a day? I don't ever want to work for Saturday down south. I know that. but anyway, yeah. No, so he would do an interview with me, and I'd give my thoughts on SEC games, and now he has... he's moving up in the world. He has his underlings, or he has other people call me. And those SEC opinions on SECCountry.com were very good last week. Hope you check them out. I'm also writing a Las Vegas Review Journal column on Saturdays, but I'd rather you just be listening to Games Galore and going to BrianEdwardsSports.com and buying my picks if you would like. I'm going to give you a couple NFL winners this week. Like I gave you, well, my 4-1 Saturday last week, and I'm telling you now, App State is good. I know they had a bad second and third quarter against Georgia, but
they're gonna come back.
That's a good team. The pick didn't work out, but don't just completely dismiss App State. They're gonna cover some numbers for you this year. But NFL numbers, Falcons -7 or less, that's a given. Chicago's all banged up. Cam Meredith, their leading receiver from last year, he's out. Alshon Jeffery's bye-bye. They got three starters that are banged up and questionable, and the Falcons have the best talent in the league. And all this stuff about Super Bowl runner-ups being jinxed in week one, being jinxed throughout the year, my boys are going to put all that nonsense to bed, folks. And the Atlanta Falcons are going to win the Super Bowl in a rematch with the New England Patriots. Do you know how many times we've had a Super Bowl rematch in back-to-back years? We've had plenty of, you know, Super Bowl rematches in regular season, but in the same two teams in back-to-back. You know how many times that's happened?
Just overall with all teams?
You're
just saying okay, in general. I'm going to go Baker's dozen.
I think you misunderstood it. How many times have the two teams that played in Super Bowl A played each other in the next Super Bowl?
The very next one. I don't know. Five?
Once. I would have thought like three or four. I would think maybe Pittsburgh and Dallas did it in the 80s, but they didn't. Or late 70s, early 80s. But it was only Dallas, Buffalo. It was 90s. I think it was 93, 94. They're both ass beatings, cowgirls.
Well, here's the number two.
Yeah. So we're going to have one this year, and Falcons are going to get that ass this time. All right, UFC 215, man. With football starting, I mean, this is just a snoozer to me, especially because any card headlined by Mighty Mouse Johnson is a snoozer.
Right.
He's a -1200 favorite against Ray Borg because he was scared to fight Dillashaw. Amanda Nunes is the co-main event because I'm glad she didn't show, though, because I had a lot of money bet on her. And if she wasn't feeling right, I'd rather just get that push. And I hadn't bet on her this week, but I don't know if I want her anymore, man. I mean, what happened there?
I don't know.
But
instill confidence, though.
The only pick I like, Neil Magny +160 against Dos Anjos. And Gilbert Melendez, the former Strikeforce lightweight champion and the former challenger for the lightweight title in the UFC. He's coming off suspension. He's dropping to 145. I would imagine that's a difficult cut for him. And he's facing Jeremy Little Heathen Stevens, who I do like, and he's in dire need of a win. And really, you know, there's nothing else on this card to get excited about. So
yeah, I'm not too excited.
I like Magny, but I mean, I'm talking like, you know, small potatoes. Small change. You know what? A team I want to put on the hot seat this week, if you will, the hot seat. Just time to show us something with your little cream puff cupcake schedule you have, and you've shown everybody nothing. South Florida, Quentin Flowers, you're at UConn. They're garbage. Take care of business early and often. Could you do that, please? North Carolina, you're at home again. You got Louisville coming in. Outside of Lamar Jackson, they don't have a whole lot. God, I'm tempted to take Iowa south of three at Iowa State, but Ames is always a tricky place. I'm with Christopher, and I brought it up. I'm gonna take Fresno plus 44. And let's see, what else do we have to talk about? Did they make a decision on Ezekiel Elliott yet? I still can't believe that South Carolina is number 31 in the AP. And by the way, the AP, I think I said it earlier, the AP has no reason to exist anymore. You're good for nothing. We have a committee, and you weren't very good at voting anyway.
It's like a phone book. It's just useless.
It's just absolutely a phone book. Yeah, phone books are totally useless. Sports pages are, God, I miss the sports. I used to read the sports page cover to cover and then read. And what's this? Samson's coffee. Okay. That's a whole lot to do about nothing. All right, check out my picks this week. BrianEdwardsSports.com. I already got a South Carolina-Missouri winner on there. I bet you know who I have on that one. I also have a total for Oklahoma State and South Alabama. Pretty easy to guess who I like there. Either Oklahoma State or the over. And since it's the total, so there's your two winners. South Carolina and the over for Oak State and South Alabama. I'm also going to be on Fresno. And oh, what else? The Nature Boy, Ric Flair. He's on his way back. Harbo, any parting shots? Michigan, 1-0. Going to be 2-0 with Cincy. Who you got after Cincy? Let's see what you got. Let's see what Michigan's got coming up.
Who do we have after Cincy? I just had it pulled up.
I'm here. You've got Air Force, then Purdue, and then a bye week. And then you've got... Do you have a derogatory name you refer to that team from East Lansing?
Oh, you mean our little brother?
Is that what you got? Little brother? Okay, that's it. Shank, who's a Sparty, he has a different name for the maize and blue. And I knew it was maize.
I'm sure he does.
I just wanted to call it mustard. I even know how to spell maize.
I'm proud.
You know, Christopher, I mean, I don't even know if he was being serious there. Did you hear what he said? You know, so Alabama's got a new offensive coordinator. He was with the Patriots staff, Belichick. And one game, they won 24-7 over FSU. Did he say that they're already bitching about that offensive coordinator?
I think so, yeah.
He did imply that, yeah. Did he? Well, you know what, Alabama fans? Shut the F up. All right, we're out. Games Galore Pod 14. Hope you enjoyed it. Talk to you next week. We'll see you.